Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP professional, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. And you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org. Welcome to the show. Today is February 5th, 2020. The markets were up today with the Dow closing at 29,290 compared to last week, Wednesday, at 28,734. And the NASDAQ was up from yesterday to 9,508. Last week was 9,275. And the S&P was up at 3,334 from yesterday. And last week was 3,273. Our topic tonight is getting your financial life in order. We are live tonight. We will take your questions. Lori C is in the studio with us this evening. We'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic, and I will do my best to answer them. The number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. And you can talk live on air, or if you're not comfortable talking live on air, you can just give your question to Lori. She'll write it down and bring it into the studio, and I'll do my best to answer. Again, tonight, our topic is getting your financial life in order. And I always figure that tax time is a good time to review your own financial picture because you get those tax documents in the mail. It gives you a chance to reflect when you see the W-2. It's like, oh, is that how much money I made this year? Is that how much taxes I paid this year? Is that how much I put into my retirement account this year? And sometimes you'll get your investment statement showing how much interest and dividends you had, and maybe if you sold some investments, capital losses, capital gains. It'll remind you to look at your year-end statement on those investment accounts. Maybe looking at your W-2 and how much you're putting into your retirement account will remind you to look at your retirement account balances. So I think it's just a really good time to kind of look at everything and make sure that you are organized. And I don't necessarily mean organized in putting it in a particular file folder in your cabinet or a particular file on your computer. I mean organizing your financial life so that you know your own financial picture, which helps you make better financial decisions as you move forward in your life and you're faced with opportunities or risk as you go through the different stages of life, buying a house, selling a house, funding education accounts, putting money into your retirement account. So there are a lot of financial decisions we make on a daily basis. And if we have this information at the tip of our fingers, it helps us make better decisions as we go through. So I've talked, in the past about taking an inventory, and people can do that in an Excel worksheet. You probably could Google financial inventory on your computer and get a checklist or a balance sheet or something. But basically, what I'm going to talk a little bit about is taking an inventory, but it's not just an inventory of your assets. It's an inventory of a number of things. So we're going to start with goals, because that's going to be your motivator. If we talk about what goals you might have either now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, or in your retirement, or when you die, what are your goals to pass on an estate to your family members? You have goals. That's the motivator. You have your balance sheet, which is your assets and your liabilities and life insurance, risk management. If you do your balance sheet and you have assets, you want to make sure that you're protecting them. That's our risk management, and cash flow. So we're going to go through, I have a couple resources. One I developed, probably 18 years ago, and that's the Excel spreadsheet. And I think I call it my lifestyle, my life goals. I don't remember what I called it. Inventory, your financial inventory, basically. And then I'm also going to use a tool that we use in financial planning. It's kind of a workbook. All right. So when we talk about what is the motivation for us to get our financial life in order, the motivation is goals. What am I going to be able to do if I do get my financial life in order? So let's talk about goals for a minute. If you say to someone, what are your goals, your financial goals? Someone might say, I want to retire at X age. That's a very broad goal. What is probably better and a better motivator for people is to talk about very specific goals. Maybe it's to buy a car. Maybe it's to buy a house. Maybe it is to, fund your children's education. Maybe it's to travel, internationally, to do a renovation on the house, to retire at a particular age. So you can have those goals, and then you can define them even more, because there's always plays in a football game. You know, the coaches, the assistant coaches, the offense coordinator, the defensive coordinator, they're all planning plays to get to the end goal of winning the game, getting that touchdown or field goal, moving the ball down the field. There's detailed plays that are sketched out, and it's not just go get a touchdown. So we have to have some goals as we move through our life, moving toward some defined goals. So we want to kind of look at in detail a little bit, living expenses, for example. You might have someone who spends, you realize you spend too much money and you'd like to save a little bit more. Well, you're going to have to look at how you're spending money in order to know how you can save more. An example I use often is, many years ago, a couple came to me, wanted to retire, at a particular age, had all these, goals that everyone wants to retire young. And we looked at their numbers and there was no way they were going to make it. But looking at the detailed expenses, they had $10,000 for gifts at Christmas. And I thought, this is incredible. I've never seen these kinds of numbers before. And you found out that there was so much extended family and they were buying for so many people. I mean, it was monumental. And, just a simple solution of tell the family to draw names from now on. Do not buy for everyone in the family. And they saved, thousands and thousands of dollars when they switched to that and were able to save for the children's college education. So understand what goal you're kind of looking at, but you have to do a little bit of the work understanding if you want to cut down on living expenses so you have more to save, you have to understand what your living expenses are. You have to know how much you're spending. Maybe you have a goal for a car, maybe a fancy car. Some people will come in and say, it's always my dream to get a Tesla. It was always my dream to buy a Corvette. Well, then if that's your goal, you set that goal and say, when do you want to do it? Is it in 3 years, 4 years, 5 years? You can set aside an account and start, plunking money into it. Maybe when you get a bonus, maybe when you get a raise, maybe when you get a gift from a family member at the holidays or your birthday, and start doing that. And you're not going to be able to reach that goal unless you plan for it and sketch it out like those, football plays we're talking about. But define the goals. And then think about all those categories where you can do that. Travel, one-time trip, many trips. A new home, home improvement, helping out with mom and dad if they have expenses as they age. Maybe you want to be able to help them. A wedding, private school for the children, or maybe private school for your grandchildren. Helping pay for college for your children or for your grandchildren, maybe even grad school. You want to identify the goals, and then you want to prioritize them. So once you kind of have your goals, throw it all out there, put it all down. And then you sit back and you look at it and you say, okay, what's realistic and what should we really do? If we want to pay for college, do we want to pay for $60,000 a year college? Or are we thinking $30,000 a year college? What makes more sense? Maybe an in-state school funded by the state, maybe $12,000. So sit down and identify those, and you're honing in on what the need is and the prioritization of that. And then once you have those goals, now you're going to be in enthused and ready to go to get your financial life in order. And that's what we're going to talk about when we come back. We had a question from Martha, and Martha, I'll answer that question as soon as we come back from the break. The phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR News and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100, extension 6, or WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1. Podcasts are also available under Public Affairs Programming at WDIY.org. Just look for Your Financial Choices. We had a listener call in a question, Martha from Allentown. She said she's contributing 14% to her 403B, which is similar to a 401K. These are employer-provided retirement plans. She's 57, hopes to work 10 to 12 more years. Good for you, Martha. Should she consider putting in the necessary 6% to the 403B to get the employer match? Yay, your employer matches. That's great. And it must be that if you put in 6%, they will match some percent of that. It might be 100%, it might be 50%, but regardless, if you put in 6, you'll get a match. So by putting in 14, Martha, you're putting in more than you need to get the match, but you're getting the tax deduction. And then you said, should I put in 6% to get the match and put the difference in your Roth IRA? And then you asked, is the interest made on the Roth taxable? So a couple of things going on here. It depends on what tax bracket you're in, Martha. So if you told me you were in a really low tax bracket, I might, and you'd have to probably run numbers, because if you're putting in 14% now into your 403B, that reduces your taxable income. That could put you in a low tax bracket, but maybe if you dropped it to 6, you might not be in the lower tax bracket anymore. You'd want to kind of look at the numbers. But if you're in a higher tax bracket, then I do like the 14% going into the 403B. If you're in a low tax bracket, I agree with you that I would put in enough to get the match. And I do like Roth IRAs, as listeners and Lori Catanzaro know. I like Roth IRAs. So to get the 6% for the match and the deferral on that, and then you could put money in the Roth IRA, and you could put in $7,000 for 2019, $6,000 plus a $1,000 catch up because you're over age 50. 55, 50. Oh gosh, I'm losing it. Got to get back into tax season mode. Anyway, you could put in $7,000 into the Roth IRA, and that will grow income tax free. Now, you said interest. Interest income, Martha, is when you're investing in like CDs and bank accounts. You can invest your Roth in the market if it fits your risk tolerance. And, you know, that's a whole nother conversation. This is just an educational show. You'd have to, this is not advice. But generally, the Roth, which is going to grow income tax free, you like to get that to be, you know, probably your, if you are inclined to take on a little risk, you might want to look to get that growing, because that grows income tax free. So when I'm looking at Roths, that's usually where I want to put my growing investments, because I want it to grow income tax free. If I want to be more conservative with some of my investments, that's where I put it into the IRA possibly, because IRAs are ordinary income regardless of how we have it invested when we take it out. So it comes out ordinary income, Roth income tax free. I like to see the growth in the Roth. So if you're in a low tax bracket, like that idea, 6%, get the match. The rest of the money can go into the Roth. If you need the tax deduction, you know, you can keep it at the 14%. All right. So I hope that helps. That'll give you a tax deduction today. When you do take money out of the 403B eventually, it will be income taxable at ordinary income taxes for federal, not subject to PA tax, but for federal, yes. So keep that in mind. Thank you for the call. Folks, if you do have questions, you can call and talk on air with me or off air. And the phone number is 610-758-8810. We are talking about getting your financial life in order. Before the last break in question, we talked about setting goals and really defining those and identifying them. Because if you can visualize it, it's so much easier to work toward it. I've done this a lot in my own life, and it's amazing how it works. Sometimes you have to extend the timeline, but you keep that goal in sight, and it's just amazing what a difference it can make in reaching your financial goals. So we talked about goals. Now let's talk about taking that inventory, that balance sheet. And what I like to do is make sure that people understand what they have, because if you understand what you have, you know, you're going to take care of it a little bit better, I think. If you ignore it, then it's like a plant. If you ignore the plant's going to die. So if you are aware of it and you're taking care of it, it's going to grow. And it's really important to understand what your financial life looks like. So the inventory basically looks like this. The inventory is like a balance sheet. You want to look at your assets. You want to look at your liabilities. But again, in my world, it's always much more than that. So we want to understand what the assets are, but we also want to understand what kind of assets they are, because they have different implications. And that will be very important when you're trying to fulfill some of your goals, understanding what kind of assets you have and what assets would be available to you to help fulfill your goals. So for example, if someone were to save everything in their retirement account while they're working, save, and they've built up everything in their retirement account and they haven't paid attention to their bank account or their other brokerage account, everything's in the retirement account, and they're age 40 and they want to buy a house for the first time, and they say, I've been saving, you know, I heard I needed to save and keep track of this. Well, at age 40, you might not be able to pull the money out of the 401k or your retirement account the way you thought you could. Number one, at age 40, you're under the minimum required, under the age to be able to take money out penalty free. And your employer may limit how much you could take out under like a loan. So sometimes people will take a loan from their retirement accounts to help buy a house, but there's limits and there's cost to that. And there's a loan that you have to pay back interest. It is to yourself, but you have to be careful of that. So this is why it's important to understand what kind of assets you have, because when you go to fulfill the goal, you say if you want to buy a house in 10 years, you know that you should also be saving outside of the retirement account. All right. So we want to get a picture of the assets, the, you know, cash in the bank, the savings in the bank, money markets, CDs. Do you have stocks, individual stocks? Do you have mutual funds? Do you have exchange traded funds, ETFs? Do you have in a brokerage account? Do you hold these individually? Do you have annuities? Do you have real estate? What does your personal property look like? Maybe you have a baseball card collection and maybe it doesn't really mean anything to you like it did when you were a kid, and maybe you could sell it. Then we want to look at your retirement accounts, 401k, IRA rollover, IRAs, beneficiary IRAs, Roth IRAs. You want to understand what kind of accounts you have. You put this all on your inventory and you're looking at your assets. Maybe you have an education account already set up for a child or a grandchild or for yourself. So those are the assets. We're going to talk a little bit more about some important information you want to understand about those assets. We're going to talk about liabilities. And when we come back, I will also take care of the question from Sharon in Allentown when we come back from this next break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
WDIY offers many choices and real voices.
This is Rosalie.
And Steve.
Join us and other hosts each Sunday from 5 to 7 p.m. for Swing Sunday, a great mix of swing, big band, and classic vocals.
WDIY is the Lehigh Valley's local source for NPR news, public affairs, and diverse music at 88.1 FM and streaming on WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. You can talk on air with us or off air, whatever you're more comfortable. Sharon called in with a question from Allentown, and she asked two questions. Is inherited money taxable as income? And can it place a person in a higher tax bracket? So answering the first question will help us answer the second question. So is inherited money taxable as income? Sharon, it depends on what you're inheriting. So when someone passes away, they have assets, and there might be an executor who marshals the estate assets, meaning the assets that were in that decedent's name alone, and there was no joint accounts, there was no beneficiary designation. It might be a house, it might be a car, might be a bank account, you know, any number of things. That's an estate with no beneficiary designation, no asset titling. That's the estate assets. The executor is going to manage the estate, maybe sell some of the, you know, property, maybe the real estate. They might sell a car, all these different things. They will report it if the decedent lived in an estate that has inheritance tax, like Pennsylvania. So they might have to pay inheritance tax on the value of the estate and any assets that the decedent controlled. So it could be even non-probate assets, meaning assets that were jointly held or assets that had beneficiary designations. So they're going to pay an inheritance tax on this whole kit and caboodle the decedent had control of. And so once the estate settles all that and pays, you know, the bills, the final expenses and everything, they're going to distribute the assets to the beneficiary. Quite often when it's just an estate distribution, there may not be any income taxes because they could be just distributing cash. Sometimes the estate will actually incur a loss and have maybe excess deductions that might pass to a beneficiary. Those excess deductions in the current tax regime don't benefit us, but if there was a sale of an estate asset that incurred a capital loss, that capital loss might carry over to the beneficiary. So the estate is going to manage that, push it out to the beneficiaries, and for the most part, cash, that kind of thing, isn't going to be income taxable to the beneficiary. But if the estate also had, let's say, brokerage accounts, investments, stock, things like that that they sold, there might be gains on that property, not loss. But sometimes the gains aren't very much because when someone dies, they get a step up in basis on investment accounts, not retirement accounts, but on investment accounts. So if mom and dad had some stock, PPL stock, and they paid $100 for it when they were kids, and now it's worth $100,000 when they die, they get a step up in basis to the date of death value. It's now the cost is $100,000. So if the executor sells the $100,000 of stock and the cost $100,000 of stock, there's $100,000 in the estate account, no taxes. They pass $100,000 out to you, no taxes to you. Okay? I know this is a little complicated, but just follow me for a second. If mom dies and it's worth $100,000 when the day she dies, and it grows to $110,000 by the time they give it to you. Maybe they're going to distribute the stock to you, or maybe they're going to sell the stock. So they sell the stock in the estate. If there's a gain from the date of death and they pass out the money to you, then the gain might pass to you if there are no deductions on the estate. The big thing that comes to people when they inherit, I'll cut to the chase here. The big thing that comes to people when they inherit that would be taxable are retirement accounts, IRAs, not Roth IRAs, but regular IRAs, 401ks, because that is called income in respect of a decedent. The IRS says during that person's lifetime, they didn't pay income tax on it if they never took it out, and that account's still there when they die. The IRS wants their income tax. So if that account now goes to a beneficiary in a beneficiary IRA, as the beneficiary takes distributions from it, they do have to pay income tax on it. And yes, it might put you in a higher tax bracket, especially under the SECURE Act, the recent legislation that was passed in December called the SECURE Act. Anyone who inherits, a non-spouse inherits, other than a few exceptions, if you inherit an IRA from someone, you will have to take it out within 10 years. You have some power and control over when you take it out, but it has to be within that 10 years. So if you're working and you know you're going to retire in 5 years, well, maybe you don't want to take it out while you're working, but then in 5 years when you retire, you could start taking it out. So sometimes inherited money is taxable, and sometimes, yes, it will put you into a higher tax bracket, but often, a lot of times, the distributions are of principal and they're not income taxable. Thank you, Sharon, for that call. We have a caller on line one. We have Alan in Allentown. Hi, Alan. Can you hear me?
Yes, Lori. Hi.
Hi. How can I help you?
Well, it's the American Opportunity Tax Credit, and I want to ask you a question about what I could be doing wrong.
Okay.
I've used my tax program that I've used for years. This is the first year I have a child that's entered into college, and it was the fall semester of 2019.
Yeah.
I specifically went and paid $4,000 out of pocket for tuition.
Good.
Now, that tuition did, I didn't realize to do it until right at the end of December. So
okay.
I did it and put it into it actually paid for the spring, so I had to indicate that it was paying for the spring.
Okay.
But the tax program, I'm underneath the limits, married and
yep.
$160,000. And it just keeps trying to give me the other credit, the lifetime learning. It just won't give me the American Opportunity.
Okay. There should be a box that you have to say that this is an undergraduate, and that they have not, and that you have not taken the credit in the past.
Did it.
You did it.
Did it all.
Okay. You're dependent. Did you put, is this for a dependent child? And you put
yes.
their date of birth in. And did you fill out the 1098-T, like the tuition form you should have gotten from the college?
Yes. Although it seems a little hokey. Sometimes it tries to drive it to taxable, and I just don't understand why.
Well,
let me explain, too, also. Part of the year, part of the annual, I spent more than the $4,000 I actually spent. It's a combination of 529 withdrawal.
Yeah, you can use the 529 for the what do you call it, the room and board, and use the $4,000 towards the tuition. Does the 1098-T actually show that there was tuition of that much, or were there scholarships?
No scholarships for that term.
Okay. All right. Well, I think that there's probably a box that must either not be getting checked or is getting checked that shouldn't be checked. So you might want to either delete one thing at a time and see if it, and then recalculate and see if it makes a difference.
Tried it.
Okay.
Done it all.
I'm
just curious if there's anything, anything in your experience, using these programs. I'm really almost ready to give up on it and try either a different company, not the credit, but try a different company or just go manual.
Do you know, if you, you could call me at my office tomorrow and I could walk through the software with you if you want. I could walk through the steps with you. You're probably not at home tomorrow.
I can do it.
You could do it. If you call back and ask Lori for the office number, give me a call and I'd be happy to kind of walk through it with you.
Okay.
Okay?
And this all comes from listening from your 2018 podcast. About
thank you. Yeah, I love the American Opportunity Credit. I go to great lengths to help people make sure they get that. So, yeah, give me a call. I want to make sure you get it. So it's just probably a software
and the
issue.
And the trick isn't you don't have to spend like $4,001, right?
No.
$4,000 even.
Yep. Yep, so we can talk. Call back, and if you don't mind, 610-758-8810. That's the radio show number, and Lori can give you the office number.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks, Alan. Have a good one.
Take care. You too.
Folks, we are at our halfway point. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810, and we will be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
WDIY 88.1 Allentown, it's 6:31. Your current temperature is 39. Tonight is going to be rain before 3 a.m., then rain and freezing rain, low around 34. Thursday, we're going to have some rain and high near 48. And Thursday night, it's going to be some heavy rain, low around 40 degrees. And also rain showers before 5 p.m. on Friday, then a slight chance of snow showers, high near 43. Friday night, mostly cloudy, with a low around 25. And Saturday, mostly sunny with a high near 37. Saturday night is going to be a chance of snow showers after 1 a.m., but mostly cloudy with a low around 25. And for your Sunday, is going to be more chances of snow showers mixed with rain after 10 a.m., but then gradually ending with a mostly cloudy with a high near 41. For Sunday night, is going to be low around 31. Now back to your financial choices with Lori Siebert.
Thank you, Shandi. And thank you, listeners, for calling in with questions. You know, that is my favorite part of the show. So the phone number is 610-758-8810. And you can talk live on air or off air, whatever you're more comfortable with. Tonight, we are talking about getting your financial life in order. So we talked about goals. We talked about the balance sheet, understanding the different kinds of assets you have, because that's going to be really important in fulfilling your goals in the future, knowing where to pull money from. But part of that understanding your assets is also understanding how they're titled. Are they in your name alone? If you're married, are they in your spouse's name? Are they joint? Are they joint with another family member or friend? If you have retirement accounts, who is the beneficiary and who is the contingent beneficiary? You know, I hope you all understand how important it is to have a contingent beneficiary on your beneficiary designations. So for people who are listening, if you have retirement accounts at work, if you have IRAs, if you have life insurance, you have to think beyond just your primary beneficiary. It's imperative to also think about contingent beneficiaries because that also helps in planning and estate planning. So just do it at the same time is my point. Part of the inventory balance sheet is also your liabilities, your credit cards, your mortgage, your home equity loan, your car loans, your student loans, and not just how much they are, how much are you paying, and what rate of interest are you paying? Because again, part of getting your financial life in order and reaching those goals is understanding how much those liabilities are costing you. And if you see it on paper, you'll know how to attack it better. And, you know, get you further down the line to reaching your goals. Oh, one other thing on the assets. The assets that we typically think of, like the bank accounts, retirement accounts, things like that. But there are also sometimes employer benefits that are considered assets that we might forget about, like restricted stock units, stock options, employee stock ownership plans. So let's not forget about some of those other assets that might be out there. One thing that I really tell people try not to count on are inheritances. Don't count on it. You never know. Maybe you're going to be on the outs with that person you think you're going to inherit from. Maybe they end up using all of those assets for their own care. Maybe they decide to give it to your brother because the brother was nicer than you were. So you never know. Don't count on them. You could note it for your own planning, but I always say don't count on inheritances. But that could be another consideration you know, in the big planning scheme. Another item that sometimes people forget about, and they don't think about it as an asset because you think it's not going to mean anything to you, it's only going to mean something to your heirs, is life insurance. You want to make sure you know how much life insurance you have, what's the death benefit. And sometimes when people buy whole life insurance, they have a cash value that could be an asset that's available to you. You might just have term insurance. That's okay, but you still want to know what kind of life insurance you have, who is the owner, who is the beneficiary, who is the contingent beneficiary, what is the death benefit, and again, if there is any cash surrender value on it, and the annual premium. Because part of planning and getting your financial picture in order is you might find out you have all this life insurance and you're paying oodles of money for it, but maybe you don't even need the life insurance. So that would be one place to free up some cash. We talk about risk management as well. So when we've gone through the inventory and we've kind of cataloged all of our assets and our liabilities and understand what kind of assets we have, and even maybe what kind of income we're getting off of those assets and what kind of interest rates we're paying on our liabilities, we want to protect those assets. And how do we do that? Well, we usually have some property and casualty insurance, like auto insurance, disability insurance, homeowners insurance, umbrella policies. Maybe we have some long-term care, health insurance, dental insurance, vision. And when I say protect those assets, you might say, well, Lori, how is auto or disability or homeowners going to protect my assets? Well, because if you don't have proper coverage on some of these insurance policies and someone falls and trips, you know, outside your home, they could sue you and they might go after your assets. So you want to make sure that you're managing the risks of that by having adequate coverage for your property, and umbrella insurance helps with that as well, kind of an umbrella over your auto and homeowners policies to give you a little extra coverage should you need it. And depending on how much you have in assets will drive how much umbrella insurance you would need. I have, you know, people who end up going on Medicare at 65, they think about their Medicare insurance, they think about their Medicare supplemental insurance if they go that route, but they might not think about dental insurance. And sometimes people think, well, you know, dental stuff's not that much. Well, when you get older, your teeth start falling out, and then you have to get a bridge or implants, and some of that is covered, some of it's not, but some of it generally will be covered. Maybe not everything, but chances are if you end up having that need, a little dental insurance would help cover some of that extra expenses, as an example I'm giving. So make sure you look at your coverage. I think the when you go with like a Medicare Advantage plan, I think the dental is sometimes included in that. Beyond just the having the coverage, you also want to make sure on that insurance, that risk management, that you know what deductible you have, collision, comprehensive deductibles, because you might have a really old car and you never thought about updating it with the insurance agent because you just didn't have time. And you have a car that's worth nothing with a $100 deductible and you're paying, you know, for collision and comprehensive. Well, maybe you don't need that kind of coverage and you want to review that with your insurance agent. So make sure you understand what your insurance is covering, how much you're paying for it, and where you have flexibility in coverage to impact the premium on the policy. If you're someone who has millions of dollars, do you really need a $250 deductible? You could raise your deductible and maybe lower your premium, and that could be worth it. So this is all part of our inventory of understanding how we put together our financial life and getting our financial life in order. Okay, before I move on to cash flow, which is a big part of reaching our goals, I have another caller off air. It's either Reuben or Robin. I think it's Reuben from Allentown. And the question is it a benefit to switch traditional IRA to a Roth IRA for tax purposes? 63 years old, retiring soon. Is it too late? And is there a limit to the amount? And how does he go about it? So this is Ruben. Ruben, whether it's beneficial to, we call it a conversion instead of a switch from a traditional IRA to a Roth IRA, we call it a conversion. Is it a benefit to convert from an IRA to a Roth IRA? The IRA being income taxable, meaning we put money into the IRA and got a tax deduction for it along the way. And when we take it out, it's all income taxable. Versus a Roth IRA, where we don't get an income tax deduction for it. We're putting in after-tax dollars into this Roth IRA, and we're letting it grow income tax-free for our retirement. So pre-tax is traditional IRA, after-tax is Roth IRA. Is it a benefit to convert? So to convert means if I take the money from my IRA, I'm going to take it out, pay income tax on it, and switch it to a Roth IRA. And generally, we do that in a trustee-to-trustee transfer direct so that there's, reported properly, and you get a 1099-R showing that you took the traditional IRA and put it into a Roth, and we pay the tax on the traditional IRA. But if we can do that at any age, and the reason we want to do it the proper way is so that we don't have like a 10% penalty for, early withdrawal. If we do it a trustee-to-trustee transfer, it's nice and clean and it's documented. We did a conversion, okay? It's beneficial if you think, Ruben, that you are in a lower tax bracket now than you might be in the future. So we really like doing conversions when we think we're paying lower taxes than we might in the future. Now, when we think about the future, if you're married, and you're older, if you're married and something happens to either one of you, if your spouse, then the survivor is in a single tax bracket. So sometimes when we look at tax brackets and are we going to be in a lower tax bracket in the future, sometimes we also try to plan to see, well, what if something happens to someone? Maybe we want to do some conversion today at what we think is a low tax bracket. Maybe you would be in the exact same bracket in the future, but if you were single, you wouldn't be. If you were single, you'd be in a higher bracket. So sometimes we might do a little planning like that. Now, you said you're retiring soon. Is it too late? It's not too late to do a conversion. You can do a conversion forever. There's no age limit on it. You can't do it to inherited Roths or inherited IRAs, but you can convert your own IRA. It's not too late. And where I really see a great window to do this is after someone retires, and maybe before they collect Social Security. So sometimes people have cash in the bank to meet their cash needs for a year or two. Sometimes they might have investment income that they can pull from that doesn't have a huge tax consequence on their tax return. So if you're in a low tax bracket because you've retired, maybe you're not getting a pension, you haven't collected Social Security yet, that might be a perfect year to do a conversion to a Roth. And when you're 63, you've got a few years to do this because they've just, under the SECURE Act, changed the required minimum distribution age to 72. So you have several years where you may be able to do some nice conversions if you're in a lower tax bracket. You asked, is there a limit to the amount? No, they used to have a limit. You couldn't be over a certain income threshold and be able to do it. You had to be, and I'm going back, way back. I think your income had to be under like $100,000 or something, and you couldn't, you could convert if it was under a certain amount. They took that limit away. So now anybody can convert. So I've seen people convert, $500,000. Because they thought tax brackets were going up. So tax rates were going up. And in fact, they went down under the Tax Jobs Act, Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, TCJA. So no limit. And how you go about it is you talk to your custodian that holds the IRA and you open up a Roth IRA and you say, I want to convert some of my IRA. You don't have to do the whole thing. You can do part of it. So if you have $100,000 in an IRA, you can say, I want to convert $10,000. I do this, you know, regularly. You can convert however much to play your tax bracket. It's a nice option. So call your custodian, tell them you need a Roth IRA account if you don't already have one, and tell them you want to do a conversion, and they'll walk you through it. Okay? So good luck with that. But I would do tax planning at the same time when you're making those decisions. Folks, we are at the last break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Tune up your week with a great variety of jazz music on WDIY, Monday through Friday nights from 9 to 11, offers many choices from the world of jazz, featuring traditional to modern styles, plus Swing Sunday at 5 p.m. and improvisational jazz on the bridge Sunday nights at 10 p.m. Listen for new releases, interviews with artists, and information on upcoming performances right here on WDIY.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You are listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1 podcast, are also available under Public Affairs, WDIY.org, and look for Your Financial Choices, all kinds of topics there. Folks, we are talking about, what are we talking about? Getting your financial life in order. It's been a fun show because for me, I love the listeners' questions. It's absolutely my favorite. And we have another one that called in. We have Richard from Whitehall. Richard says he has student loan for son. Haven't seen son in 2 years. He quit school. Oh, that's a bummer. $172,000 charging the father, but it's the son's debt. He applied for a parent loan. That's a pretty hefty loan, Richard. For the 2 years of school, he must have been in a high cost private school, and I'm not exactly sure what your question here is, but you're saying it's your son's debt, but it's a parent loan, so often the kids will have access to a minimum amount of loan. And then the parents will have available to them a parent plus loan, parent loan. You might have taken out a private loan. If it's in your son's name and no one signed for it, then I would say that it's your son's debt. But if it's in your name and you signed for it, I'm pretty sure it's going to be your debt. Now, if you can't locate your son, you could possibly contact the loan organization and explain the situation to them and see what your options are. At the time you took the loans, there should have been disclosures that came with the loans that might outline various scenarios that could occur. But If you signed for the loan, that might be your responsibility, Richard. So I would contact the loan organizations and talk to them about your options and see how they're titled, who is on the loan, and what the responsibility is. I'm sorry you have that circumstance. It's unfortunate. And you could work on trying to find your son or contact your son. If he was just in school 2 years, there's a hope and a chance that he could write himself as he matures a little bit. And so maybe what you could do is just pay the minimum amount that you have to so that it doesn't affect your credit rating and your financial picture. Maybe just pay the minimum amount until you get this resolved. And it could reconcile itself, hopefully, in the future. And I wish for that for you. Okay, Richard? So thank you for calling in with your question. In talking about getting your financial life in order, one of the things we did end with was liabilities and making sure that you understand what those liabilities are and how much interest are tied to those. So, Richard, that is something also you might want to break down, because you might want to make sure you're just doing the minimum payments, but make sure you're paying one that might have a higher interest rate. As far as kind of wrapping up getting your financial life in order, we talked about assets and titling and what kind of assets and liabilities and what kind of coverage and what kind of costs or liabilities, what kind of costs those liabilities were as far as interest rates. We talked about risk management, making sure you're protecting your assets. Let's talk about cash flow. So now how we understand we accumulate assets is generally, we could have an inheritance, but generally we're saving money through our lives, working, saving money, accumulating. I always say we like to have our money. When you start saving, you start making your money work for you while you're working too. So your money starts to work for you while you're working. But you have to understand your cash flow, because the only way you're going to save money is if you don't spend as much as you're taking in. So kind of get that together. Typically, this would be while you're working. We're talking about wages, maybe bonuses, maybe stock awards. Maybe you have some part-time work. Maybe you're working two or three jobs. Maybe you have a family member who does give you gifts. The reason you might want to account for that is, how are you saving that, or what are you using it for? But again, I never count on it into the future. If you're already retired, you would want to understand your cash inflows, which might be a pension, it might be annuity income, it might be Social Security. You want to know what is coming in as far as cash flow. And then or maybe you're older and have retired and you have retirement accounts where you're taking maybe a systematic withdrawal from a retirement account. Maybe it's monthly, maybe it's quarterly, maybe you take it out annually. So what are your income sources? And then what are your expenses? How are you spending money? You'd want to understand for living expenses, for car maintenance, for insurance, for home, real estate taxes, medical expenses. So typically we like to look at these in categories of living expenses, car, home, insurances, healthcare, you know, medical care. But then also further, what is discretionary, that you have discretion in what you spend, and what is non-discretionary. So a mortgage or rent would be non-discretionary. Food, to some extent, is non-discretionary. What would be discretionary in food would be going out to eat, entertainment, alcohol, movies. That is discretionary spending. So you might want to understand what is your discretionary and what is your non-discretionary spending. And after you've gone through this exercise, you'll see if you have excess cash flow. And if you have accounted for your income coming in, oh, and taxes, because usually when we're looking at the income flow, we're usually looking at the net amount, so the net after taxes. After you've done that and you see what the surplus is supposed to be, if you have one, is that realistic? Is that what you really have at the end of every month? So if it's not what you have at the end of every month, and you really didn't do a good job of understanding how you're spending money, and you need to go back and revisit that and go through it again. Sometimes people forget that we put so much on credit cards these days, and A lot of people do, and a lot of people pay them off every month. So I don't have a problem with that if you pay it off every month. But they get so used to doing everything on their credit card, they forget that sometimes they still are doing checks or maybe online bill pay. So when they're gathering their expenses to try to have an understanding of how much they're spending, they forget about these little other places where they might have set up some automatic spending, and they forget to include that. So the test is to look at what your monthly surplus is, and the brain check is, does that make sense? Do I actually have that much money at the end of every month? And there might be months where that doesn't work. If you have like a real estate tax bill that's due in August and you know that's coming, or sometimes people do quarterly estimated tax payments. So occasionally it's not always going to work exactly, but for the most part, you could kind of average that in and see how that works. But taking a good picture of your cash flow will help you see if you have surplus. And if you don't have surplus and you're break even, now you go back and you look at those discretionary categories to see where can I cut, like my example earlier in the show with the $10,000 Christmas gifts. I can cut there. And if I cut it to $2,000, I just, you know, found $8,000 for the year. That could be huge when you're trying to meet some of the other goals that you have. I think that people don't realize when they're taking money out of the ATM that they're spending it. I rarely ever take money out of the ATM. I hardly even remember my PIN. I just hardly ever do it. Everything goes on a credit card. We see it every month. We look through it. We say, oh, look at all of these stores where we were maybe buying things. Gas is always a big thing. But it's the eating out that I like to see disappearing from my credit card statement every month. Years ago, I think when the kids were all home, it was really sometimes a cop out to kind of go out to eat. It's like, oh gosh, to make a big meal, let's all go out. And not that we ever spent a lot of money going out. I don't think we did. But it makes such a difference when you have kind of some self-awareness around these things, like resisting the impulse buying in the grocery store line, as my husband has trained me to do. Resist the impulse buying. Resist the impulse to go out to eat. Take a step. Think about it. Hey, maybe we could do that next week. Well, let's eat out of the fridge tonight. So having an understanding of that. So putting this all together, why we wanted to get our financial life in order and why this is such a perfect time of year to do it, because we have all those income tax documents that are coming in and we want to look at those and see where we are and bring it all together. When we understand how much we have in assets and what kind of assets they are, if I have that goal, and I was alluding to this earlier, if I have that goal of maybe I want to buy a house and I want to put a down payment on the house, and maybe the down payment is $50,000 and I've been doing a lot to save. Remember, I said if you saved everything in your retirement account, you would have to take it out of your retirement account. If you're too young, you could have a penalty for that if you don't do it right. You might have to take a loan. But if you take $50,000 out, maybe you're 59 and a half, you're 60, and you want to take $50,000 out of the IRA, you have to pay tax on that. So you actually don't have $50,000. You might only get $40,000. This is why we have to know what kind of assets we're going to use in fulfilling our goals. Because if I have instead saved $100,000 in a high yielding money market account, I know I need $50,000. I can pull the $50,000 out of that account. So with no tax consequence. All right. So that's why we want to understand. It can make such a big difference. And, understanding our goals, whether we're saving for a home, education, or our heirs. People who pay attention to what they have are usually the people who have. So I hope this has helped. And I'm so thankful to all our listeners tonight who called in with questions. It was just fabulous. I really appreciate it. And I have, you know, the best of wishes for all of you. And hopefully we can continue to help and bring some informative information about your financial life here each and every week. And podcasts are also available at WDIY.org under Public Affairs Programming, Your Financial Choices, all kinds of topics. And, you know, some of them are timely. We do have things like the Secure Act that came through, but I just did a show on that. So if you need to learn more about that, there is a show there on that. Next week, I am going to talk about important information in clothes. Does that sound familiar? We see it on all kinds of envelopes coming in the mail lately. Important tax information in clothes. Deciphering tax documents. If you're a self-preparer, understanding tax documents can make a difference on your tax return. So that's what we're going to talk about. And of course, always taking listener questions this time of year during tax season. So thank you, Lori, for answering all the calls. Shandi, thank you for being here tonight. Coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller with In the Tradition Folk Music. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices, and have a great week.